Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate this opportunity to be in such a distinguished group of people actually out there doing the work. So as we just heard, we'll be switching gears a little bit, looking now at cereal and particularly maize-based systems. So brief overview of this talk. As we all concerned about global food, in a changing world, that's why some of us became agronomists. And using this lens of the maize mix systems, we heard earlier from Sarah Moon why some of the justification for that. And you'll know that I'm somewhat honest broker here because I, in the past, worked for ICRISAT. So for those of you who know the mandate crops of ICRISAT, I was somewhat accused of being a CIMMYT file because I've always seen the importance of maize-based systems. I'm particularly going to drill down about the evidence, the literature, what we can see about biophysical evidence. I also have a participatory hat and a systems impact base, but today I want to talk about how do these systems perform? Do we get more crop per drop and so on? And I'll be using, big surprise for those of you who've seen me talk before, but a Malawi case study and both on-farm research and some simulation modeling. So, of course, we have these obligatory slides where we look a little bit at world population, and whether or not we've reached peak oil, we certainly know that there's increasing demand for oil, and this has implications, of course, for not only fertilizer, but crops. And we heard earlier about some of the geopolitical implications of these spikes in fertilizer prices, this new reality, as Andy said, And just for a second, I want to remind you that if you think fertilizer prices are high here in Texas and the Midwest, they are 3 to 10 times as high in sub-Saharan Africa because of infrastructure and many other reasons. So I want to make the case here from this nice review by Vitosik and colleagues that showed that whether we are talking about Western Kenya maize, mixed maize systems, or the Midwest, or Northern China, where we have excess fertilizer, excess nutrients, or these incredible deficits that we've talked about some, whichever one, we still are very concerned with resource use efficiency. It's important for everyone, and also trying to improve nitrogen fixation into these systems as we benefit in the Midwest, to help bring these more into balance. So I think we can all agree that resource use efficiency, water and nitrogen are the two I'm going to talk about today, is important wherever you are in the agroecosystems around the world. So, as I said, I'm going to talk about maize mixed systems. FAO has a great farming systems. John Dixon and others put this together that gives us sort of helps us ground us where we're at. So one of the things to notice in Africa is, unlike Southeast Asia, we're not talking about irrigated systems in most areas. This is around along the Nile. You can see here this one system is the irrigated systems and other major rivers. But generally, we're talking rain-fed agriculture, which is why I'm going to talk a lot about rain use efficiency, or, you know, maize and cereals, kilograms of grain per millimeter of rainfall. So important. Particularly here in southern eastern Africa, this is a maize mix system, though certainly maize is important, rapidly growing in much of West Africa as well. Although we've been often think about those of us that work in Africa and people on the ground feel like things are not changing, that the smallholder farm families are facing the same problems they've faced for centuries. In fact, there's new, maybe you can see that little pest there, new crops are continuing to come up. There's big changes on the horizon, as I'll talk about in a minute, and this is what this next generation is going to have to cope with. And on the one hand, there is positives. There's new market opportunities. Legumes, in particular, since that's the area I work more, there is, South Africa in particular is using a lot more soybeans, pigeon pea, with input and output markets. Changes in globalization have made, in some cases, opportunities for farmers. But on the other hand, as I said, fertilizer, peak fertilizer prices, even with massive subsidies, we do see often cases where you don't have as many supplies available. So, volatile. I won't get into land ownership changes, but there are a lot going on in certain parts of Africa. But I will talk a little bit about climate change. As we know, it's extremely variable in much of these rain-fed systems, so it's hard to see changes underway. But this is this rapid, predicted changes. We haven't actually been able to detect it in some places. But this review by the IPCC shows that 19 out of 20 models, if you take them out 100 years, we're talking about a hotter Africa, and particularly in southern Africa, we're talking about a drier Africa, particularly in the dry season. So this is something, reality, to be concerned with. Farmers already know that on the ground here in Zimbabwe, they're looking at these erratic rainfall events and drier seasons often. So what do I mean by sustainable intensification? I'm going to focus in on particularly two aspects, legume diversification, of which there's been intensive research throughout southern eastern Africa. There's studies that were published in 1925 on mucuna use in maize-based systems, so there is a body of literature to look at. Conservation agriculture, here shown as sole crop maize with herbicide use, mulch, I'm calling it zero-till basically, surprisingly very little biophysical data, and that's one of the things I want to bring up today. I know you've heard this from researchers before, lack of research, but it is really an issue when we're putting so many eggs in this basket. Obviously, conservation tillage has been looked at, and conservation agriculture in other parts of the world, but in smallholder conditions in sub-Saharan Africa, you'll see a surprising lack of data. So I have already gone through, not just looked at all agroforestry systems, but sort of what I call a sweet spot. This is where agroforestry systems that are practical, that are seed-based in most cases, so easy to plant, not requiring transplants, that don't have long time horizons. How many farmers do you know can wait 3 years to basically get a fertilizer or soil improvement basis? So we're looking at ones that are at most a one-year investment. So trying to keep into the more practical types of agroforestry systems, sort of improved fallow and rotation type systems where you get maize fairly soon. Here's a mucuna showing that it's not just trees, but green manures need to be considered as well. And on the other hand, I'm not looking at grain legumes that, much as I love phaseolus, except for climbing beans, you're not getting a lot of vegetative material there. So I'm looking at ones that, such as, big surprise, pigeon pea, Cajanus cajun, and here as an intercrop with maize, and here as an intercrop with soybean. It's a great intercrop. Anyways, these bushier or vinier grain legumes that give you a grain legume, so you're getting something nutritious or that you can sell now, but also a lot of vegetation. So again, not all grain legume, but the ones that provide some multiple benefits. Conservation tillage or agriculture, ideally conservation agriculture includes diversification, but again, very few examples in the literature. So I included studies, published studies, where they also looked at monoculture maize, although the conservation agriculture definition includes crop rotation. But we are looking at whatever studies we can find. From West Africa, the Zaï planting pits, also a similar system, planting basins in Zambia and southern Africa. Mogoi Ripper, again from Zambia, where there's been a lot of innovation around conservation agriculture. And tide ridge systems that have been tested in Zimbabwe for a number of years. So we kind of looked at anything out there that was conservation agriculture. So let's just review quickly. The literature review we did included agroforestry systems, grain legume systems, and conservation agriculture. But one of the surprising results is that only one journal article, and we were even willing to take reports if they had yield data from multiple sites. But unfortunately, all the reports we could find, and we have an extensive, actually the biggest in the world, Africana, in our library at MSU, literature base to look at, plus the usual, Google Scholar and other types of searches. So we did an extensive search, but we could only find one journal article that reported on zero-till on-farm in sub-Saharan Africa. So since this is being widely promoted and has all these benefits in terms of crop per drop in other locations around the world, this really does need to be tested, as you'll see. So what was the benefit? Well, many people look at maize yield, and these are maize mix systems, and farmers, for many farmers, maize is life, so it's important. And we annualized it. That is, if there's a sole crop maize for your check, every year it produces maize. If you use a maize legume rotation, such as maize soybean rotation or maize pigeon pea, then you only get maize 1 year out of two. So we annualized. We divided the maize in half. So we're trying to look at how much maize is produced because people need to fill their maize basket, be able to feed their families. But we also look at protein yield from the maize and the grain legume. So in terms of protein yield, the grain legume diversified systems obviously do a bit better. So because they have high protein. So we're trying to look at different services, and we chose five of them, two provisioning and two supporting. So for sustainable intensification, we tried to look at things like soil carbon. But there's all sorts of methodological issues about measuring water infiltration or soil carbon, and you can't see those changes. You cannot see those changes for 5 years. Let me repeat that. Don't send me papers where people show me changes in organic matter after 5 months. No, it takes years, particularly on farm where you've got a variable background. The soil carbon people in the room are laughing because it's true. So, unfortunately, we couldn't use that as a proxy for sustainability, although I think it ultimately feeds most of the world. Then soil organic matter is important. So we use things like nitrogen fertilizer efficiency. Maize is a great integrator. Even soil scientists have to agree that maize response to fertilizer tells you something about the quality of that soil, and certainly an important function in a fossil fuel short world. Also, the crop per drop. Maize grain yield per millimeter rainfall is an important indicator. Obviously, systems that conserve water should show improvements in this. Biomass produced, again, annualized. So do some of these systems produce more biomass? That is a nice proxy for eventually organic matter improvements and eventually maybe some forage for our crop-livestock integration. We've got to get more biomass out of some of these systems. Okay. So one way to show all these systems in one type of figure is these amoeba or radar type ones. So this is a very complicated one, but showing you could even include some of the profitability and socioeconomic contributions from another paper. Not Siglinda Siegman, just a different person. But anyways, so let me just take you through some of the results. So we drilled down in some of our best papers that had multiple sites over time and space. Rather than doing a comprehensive review of anyone's ever said anything about these systems, we drilled down and really looked intensively through systems reports in the literature that were well done. So unlike some radar charts where they do it as a percent of a check system, we actually, to be able to compare all these different papers, we used the same axes in every single case. So maize yield 0 to 5,000, so 5 megagrams per hectare, 5,000 kilograms, twice that for biomass. Rain use efficiency, in other words, kilograms of grain per millimeter of rainfall, and protein yield, about 500 kilograms per hectare. Maize yield is about 10%. Protein. So if you just have a sole crop maize, then this is basically about 10% order of magnitude less. So here's your continuous maize without fertilizer, sort of showing you what the system can produce. If you have fertilizer, in this case about 660 kilograms, then you can certainly get lots more benefits from these systems. But if you have a Gliriosidia maize intercrop, at least in this particular site, it's a long-term study by ICRAF. Biomass can really go through the roof, and organic carbon actually is improved in this system because they've been looking at it for 15 years, and you get improvements in fertilizer efficiency and so on. But not much protein. That's just from an extra maize yield, not from there's no grain legume in this system. another on-farm multi-site study, different types of agroforestry, systems, again, really large amounts of biomass from these systems. Not surprisingly, that is what they are selected for. And in this case, it sort of varies. Some of the papers show improvements in rain use efficiency, as you saw here, compared to fertilized sole crop maize, but not in all cases. Now, let's look at some typical of the grain legume systems. Now, in this case, this is a paper, a Tom Lowe, that actually I'm on as well. In this case, we're looking at pigeon pea maize intercrops. I told you I often bring up pigeon pea because it is a shrubby legume that also gives us some grain every year. Trifrosia, so this is more of a green manure system for comparison. And then we've got a pigeon pea plus groundnut or peanut intercrop. So kind of diversified legume, and then we rotate with maize. So in that system in purple here, you can see that maize yields go down. Actually, they go up in the years that maize is there, but we annualized it. Remember, we didn't try and give ourselves the credit of just looking at maize and the maize yield. We also said, well, reality is farmers will have to sell that or pigeon pea or groundnut or eat that nutrient-rich one, but they'll have less maize yield in that system. So it's a fair comparison. But for nutrition purposes and depending on the market profitability, which we didn't look at in this particular paper, that protein yield would go way up. So a system, if you're looking for nutrition, that's a good system. However, if you're just looking for rain use efficiency, then the Trifrosia one has that kind of a range of benefits, more than monoculture maize with fertilizer. So this has modest amounts of fertilizer in all these systems except for that one. You get more bang for your buck if you have these legumes in it. This paper, we have both continuous maize with and without fertilizer, a degraded site, it looks like, because, as you remember, the axis is the same in all of these different studies I'm showing you today, exact same axis. I'm not switching around on you. So in this case, maize yield is very low, even with fertilizer, and is slightly modestly increased with pigeon pea. But in a rotation, you can get a lot of biomass, but your protein yield goes down in that case. Because if you have maize pigeon pea every year, then you're getting more protein yield because the pigeon pea did well in this particular site. So it is difficult in these degraded sites to get much benefits, but you get a range there with the grain legume incorporation. Now, let's talk a little bit on conservation systems. As I said, we could find few studies. These two were very good studies done on multiple sites, multiple years in southern Africa. And the ripper system that we, and ripper plus mulch plus manure. So this should be providing us some improvements in rain use efficiency, and yet, unfortunately, very modest improvements. Protein yield in this case is just a percent of the maize yield because there's no grain legume in the system. Plow and hand hoe were the check systems, depending on the location. Some carry Zambia and Zimbabwe, people plow, and Malawi, and other locations, Kenya and so on, people use hand hoe. So they've used a farmer check in all these cases. And sometimes they also included different types of organic matter technology inputs following recommended practice. So you can really see the differences from that, very modest in this particular degraded site. Here, absolutely no changes with these different systems. So, as I said, I was really interested in mulch retained zero tillage because this is being widely promoted based on work in other parts of the world, particularly Malawi and Mozambique and Zambia. And from field observation, you can see that there is potentially some nutrient immobilization with these mulches, even with fertilizer, and this in many cases, it may seem to outgrow this, but we needed some biophysical data. And again, the papers that we see talk about adoption. They talk about simulation modeling, which is particularly suspect because it has not been calibrated. First, our models are not very, they're good at legume diversification, but they are not so good at conservation tillage. That's just a problem with biophysical type crop simulation models. And they have certainly not been calibrated in southern eastern Africa. So looking at those, we need to ground truth this stuff. So we have two good studies to do that with where we did the full conservation agriculture. In other words, including crop rotation or including manure in this case. So this is the new recommendation, maize, zero tillage, manure, and nitrogen. We can see some protein yield improvements, not surprisingly, with cowpea. And biomass, a lot of biomass that could be used for soil cover, for feeding livestock. So unlike some reports in the literature saying you can't grow this in unimodal systems, southern Africa, you can, even on farm. But maize yield, no giant increases, modest increases. And so fertilizer efficiencies stay very modest. And rain use efficiency, again, very modest, unfortunately. Maize yield improvements, giant organic with modest amounts of manure in these particular sandy sites, but zero till, no increases in yield. However, the biomass didn't go down much, and so it looks like it's partly translation into grain, and so maybe we need the right maize varieties. This is not, you know, the final report here. This is just showing us areas that we need to look at more, because the rain use efficiency yields the returns that we're looking for, no evidence of that. So why are there so few studies of what this technology and why were limited services from these conservation agriculture technologies observed? Well, one thing, they aren't using the full conservation agriculture with crop rotations and or manure being included. And I'm certainly have to say that we haven't tested this to the extent that we need to. So let's switch back to the legume results. I'd hoped we'd have more to say about conservation agriculture, but we shouldn't go beyond our data. So we certainly have evidence that grain protein is improved and that soil biomass is, which is reassuring. Because again, there is skeptics out there that say you can't do this and degraded soils, and we are seeing that from comprehensive studies that you can, and that maize grain annualized yield doesn't go down except for very modestly, and with rotations it does. So, of course, we were selecting legumes that we thought would basically improve maize grain yields. And so, generally, because maize grain yields are conserved, we improve the crop per drop. They're generally increased in these systems. But this has been a huge area of contention. There has been many critiques of legumes saying you can't grow legumes, particularly these more bushy, vegetative-type legumes or perennials or semi-perennials even, agroforestry-type systems. You can't do this because in these systems you're going to run out of water. I don't know how many of you have heard this, but this is very much out there. So, you know, what is the consequence? This cowpea here, is it using up the soil water so that then you can't grow a corn crop? So, of course, we're going to look at a Malawi case study to see is this what is the potential for these systems and what happens actually. And this is a very good system to do this because it is very maize-based, and they've over decades gone to sole crop maize with fertilizer. So, can you, in this system that is very focused around maize, put some grain legumes into that and improve your rain use efficiency and so on? Fertilizer use, I have to keep pointing out that although there's been some recent years when we have had massive increase in access, fortunately, that there's very little use if it's not subsidized. So we have to improve that profitability for sustainable intensification, and I believe that legumes will help us improve our access to fertilizer by making it more profitable. We have a lot of evidence of that. And the other reason I want to talk about Malawi case study is that we have University of Malawi and extension colleagues to work with, and some outstanding farmer research groups as well. So this is ABSIM modeling results I'm going to show you, and some on-farm results as well. And ABSIM has been extensively tested and verified in parts of southern and eastern Africa. I was involved in the early 90s with some of the earlier work on this, and they've continued to do that. And recently, through my student, Mary Ohlenberger, who I will use any hard questions about modeling, she's here to address those, fortunately. Anyways, we're making some new strides in using these simulation models, which I'm very excited about, because we can start to understand a much broader range of sites. And of course, one of our goals in the future is to look at projected climate change impacts on these systems. But first, let's look, because we have highly variable rainfall and comprehensive data, we can look back to try and understand the future. In other words, we've got years where we've got really erratic rainfall, and what happens then? So six sites, For northern Malawi, with historical daily precipitation and temperature, some infill was had to be done. We have soil profiles that, again, have been vetted through, there's been quite a comprehensive work with ABSIM. And the first system we looked at was a pigeon pea rotation with maize. As of simulation issues, it's easier to simulate that. So, as I said, we've been working with partners at Michigan State University with the University of Malawi for a long time, including some farmer researcher groups and, in particular, a nutrition group out of Ekwendeni Hospital that sees the link of food to nutrition, which is an exciting group to work with. These are the different sites. As you can see, Malawi is averaged over a number of decades, highly unimodal, although there are certain locations where we see a little bit indication of bimodal rainfall. So this is the growing season. So this is a take-home here today, that we were really concerned with the fact that when you look at continuous maize, you get some decrease. This is in a clay soil, and here's in a sandy soil, so two extremes to look at. soil water does go down. Obviously, you're growing a crop. And if you have a pigeon pea, then, you know, this deep-rooted pigeon pea legume does use more water. But the important thing to note is that there is seasonal soil water recovery, that it does pop right back up. And so we are seeing the ability of this system to sustain these legumes as well as the cereal crop. And so this translates into yield and substantial yield gains. So with a modest amount of fertilizer applied to both systems, so this is the continuous maize system at these different sites, we get, you know, 50 to 200% increases over time. And, of course, there's a lot of variability around that, and I want to look at that briefly as some of the simulation modeling lets you do. One of the things that farmers are really concerned with, what about how many years does the rotation system actually produce no maize yield? So this is just the maize yield year. And in that year, is there any time when the pigeon pea year, the year before, puts this maize at risk? And so this gives you the probability of yield being greater in the pigeon pea and in the rotation system versus the sole crop monoculture. And you can see that these systems perform differently, but in almost all cases, we weren't talking about 1 out of 10 years that you're putting at risk. It's only about 1 out of 100. So the simulations, and of course they're just cropping simulations, but still, they're a tool, and these have been more verified than many, show no limitations for soil water utilization in this rotation. So you can stick a pigeon pea in here and still be pretty confident that you're not going to reduce your maize yield. And they seem to be robust over different types of rainfall patterns, at least from this initial work, and the maize yields were increased. Now, of course, that's simulation best bet opportunities. What happens on farm? Well, again, I'm using a radar chart, though in this case I'm using the monoculture maize with a small amount of fertilizer, 35 kilograms, as my check system. So this is kind of the best of current, that's about the most that farmers currently use of fertilizer, those who use fertilizer. So can we improve fertilizer efficiency? Can we get more of a bang for the buck, kilograms of grain per kilogram of fertilizer used? Can we get more biomass, which should translate into soil improvement? Or, in fact, some farmers in some of the locations that have taken these technologies up are selling that pigeon pea forage for milk. So certainly farmers will be able to use that biomass, whether or not for soil fertility remains to be seen. But there's benefits to the livelihoods there. Protein yield, again, improvements in protein yield. Rain use efficiency, though, not so great, at least in terms of the maize yield. So I think we still have to keep looking at how we can improve rain use efficiency. So we didn't see a reduction in rain use efficiency, which is how we've been critiqued, that, you know, these perennials, legumes or semi-perennial legumes, bushy ones, will reduce our water and make it so that our maize yields actually go down. But we haven't seen any evidence of that. Protein yields can increase, biomass increasing really substantially. And fertilizer efficiency increased as well. So these aren't simulated yields. These are actually on farm from dozens and dozens of studies over several years. So in summary, We looked at five services from different maize-based systems and different candidates for sustainable intensification. And I'm not saying it for one or the other. I would like to see combinations of these. I just want to be evidence-based. So, and this, you know, comes out of the fact that, like in Malawi, in the past we promoted Cassia spectabilis as an agroforestry. It's a legume, very productive. But it turns out it's a non-fixing legume. We have to be careful, folks. You know, be careful out there. Let's not promote non-fixing nitrogen. So there's basically stealing nitrogen from the maize when it went on farm. And this is was, you know, promoted throughout Malawi. So this isn't a small case. So it did happen. So we have to be careful. Maize grain yield in all these best bet systems is equivalent, or when it's annualized, or increased. Protein yield, if you have grain legumes there, increases. And biomass produced increases with all legume systems, really threefold sometimes. Rain use is sufficient, is variable. At least there was no decrease, but we didn't see the substantial increases we hoped to see. And nitrogen fertilizer efficiency of the grain legumes was substantially increased. So we can make sustainable intensification more profitable if we also promote grain legumes. But this was a real challenge to review sustainable intensification for maize-based systems in sub-Saharan Africa, in that there was just almost no studies comprehensively that were on farm that looked at these systems in this environment with these soil types and these rainfall patterns. So this is a major knowledge gap. All right. Thank you very much.